From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 504, Exchange at Ignite, with guest Gareth Gudger, recorded Tuesday, October 4th, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I am your host, and we're making another great show. We're post-Ignite, although granted, time shifting is going to take a hold of things here. Recorded a lot of stuff at Ignite, which you've been listening to by the time you hear this show, but I just got back, so we're still dealing with all of that. And happy to introduce our guest, Gareth Gudger, who is a Microsoft MVP specializing in Exchange and Office 365. Gareth started his career in 1999 working on Windows NT 4. Ah, oh, I love me some NT 4. And Exchange 5.5. No, I did not love Exchange 5.5. That was a painful version of Exchange. For most of his career, he has held a consulting role primarily delivering Microsoft technologies to businesses. He holds several Microsoft certifications, including an MCSE in messaging and an MCSA in Office 365. And he blogs at supertechboy.com, which is a site focused on Exchange, Office 365, and adjacent technologies. Welcome on the show, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Richard. Pleasure to be here.
And a bit embarrassed you haven't been on before, because you've been at this, you know, almost as long as I have, I think. Like, 99 was good times. And NT4 with SQL 5 was my favorite rig, you know, just like bulletproof, worked every day, if not for the fact that hardware wore out, because of course before virtualization, you know, I had a lot of confidence in it. But 5.5, well, that was a pre Active Directory version of Exchange.
Yeah, it was. There was a, that was the last version before it went into Active Directory. And that's actually when Exchange had its own little directory services kind of in the background, which, you know, in a lot of ways might have been a little bit of a precursor to Active Directory. So
I have no doubt it had huge influence on what AD became, because that was a very big dependency. You know, 2000 was not a fun time. You know, it was very much a battle with the new version of Windows, this concept of Active Directory, which was very raw, and then Exchange came to play. Like, it was in 2003, it was challenging.
Yeah, definitely. Exchange 2003 was definitely a bit of a resource hog, and you know, you had the, you know, shared clustered storage and all that kind of fun stuff. So, you know, and it was probably the golden years of public folders as well there. So,
and totally related to this conversation, I got to read you a comment from the episode I did back in September with Paul Cunningham about migrating to Exchange 2016. This was episode 490. This comment comes from regular listener and past Run As Radio mug receiver, Dave Aykroyd, who said, hi guys, great show. It was interesting to hear how relatively unpainful it is becoming to do a version to version upgrade of Exchange. It almost feels like one of those, I suffered this and those who come after me should suffer too situations. Being about 10 years older than a young person that I was and having to deal with near millenniums coming in, I regularly go into the mode of, when I was your age, and here I am again. However, I also wouldn't wish the joys of maintaining Exchange on anyone and feel happy I'm not the person running Exchange server anymore. Because clearly Dave's moved to the cloud like so many have. And he goes on to point out exactly that issue. I do find it strange that people still choose to run their own Exchange servers, and I'm guessing it's companies with ultra-thick tinfoil hats, and Richard, because I still run my own Exchange server because deep down I hate myself, who are left with an on-prem Exchange now. Are we now at the end for people who paid for a bit of tin and are intending on staying on-prem for the full length of the life of that server? Also, are there any features that would encourage someone to stay on-prem, or are we at the stage, like many other products, where it is actually Azure being baked and tested and then dropped into the on-prem product? Much like with other areas of the Office team, I'm impressed that they can still think of new features that an Exchange server could have. I'd been stuck for a send email if I was at PM. Dave, thanks once again for your great comment. Yeah, the upgrade path from Exchange, I just finished mine a little while ago, from 2013 to 2016 was just not that painful. It was pretty darn easy.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot easier now. And the small system, great sessions out there. Actually, Ignite had some good sessions on it again. I think it was, might have been Brian Day's session. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, I mean, it's so much easier. You know, traditionally when you were going, say, from 03 to 10, you know, yeah, at some point you were doing that hard cut, right? Where you had to introduce your 10 servers and then you had legacy namespaces and, you know, the 10 was redirecting and proxying back to 03. But yeah, when 16 came out, that hard cut requirement isn't there anymore. Yeah. You could keep your 2013 Exchange servers out there, and they could up proxy to 2016.
Yeah, and I ran mine like that for ages, and it's only in the past few months finally said, let's finish the cleanup here and just turn that VM off. You know, I don't need it anymore.
Yeah, so the 13 to 16 was a very, very simple upgrade. And, you know, there's a lot of people that have kind of commented. I know Tony Rebin has been one of them that said, you know, 2016, it feels like a service pack to 2013 in a lot of ways.
And he said exactly that on the show, in fact.
Yeah.
Where are you still finding folks that are running Exchange on-prem? Do you run into anybody like that?
Yeah, I still run into it quite a bit, but more so now it's the hybrid. So each year for me as a consultant, it seems to have been a, you know, what's the flavor of the year kind of thing, right? So a couple of years ago, it seemed like there was a lot of 07 to 13 migrations. Last year, it seemed like I was starting to run into some more 10 to 16, and obviously that's continuing this year.
Yep.
But now what I'm seeing is it's people that have Exchange 2010 hybrid, and now they want to go to Exchange 2016 hybrid. So a good portion of the migrations I'm running into now have that hybrid component where they may have all their mailboxes in the cloud, or maybe they've got some of the mailboxes in the cloud and, you know, they have a reason to keep some back. And they're saying, okay, well, we have 10. We know it's aging. We know it's probably got 4 more years until it drops out of the support lifecycle. It's already, you know, exited mainstream support. We see that the 16 management tools are a little bit closer to what we see in Office 365. So that'll help, you know, our help desk guys have a little bit of less of a learning curve. So a lot of times I see them wanting to go up to 16 purely just to have a, you know, a similar management experience and that alone. So yeah, I'm definitely seeing a lot of 10 to 16 and refreshes with hybrid in the mix, and we put 16 in and rerun hybrid, and they're on the latest and greatest again.
Yeah, no, totally fair. And I don't disagree with you that the hybrid seems to be a permanent state. Like, I find relatively few organizations that are actually turning off everything on premise. When, you know, it's just not that simple. There's a lot to making that migration.
Yeah. And, like I said, Ignite had some great sessions. There's one session out there. You can find it on either the Ignite YouTube channel or actually on, Ignite homepage. They now have an on-demand video section. And there's a session out there called Running Hybrid for the Long Haul. And I would definitely recommend, you know, your listeners listening to that one. But yeah, I mean, the big, problem you have is if you want your local Active Directory to be your source of authority for all your accounts, which generally then means you're using directory synchronization, you're then kind of forced into an Exchange hybrid, or at least maintaining an Exchange server on-prem just to manage some of those attributes that you can't then manage in the cloud.
And this sort of speaks to something Dave was asking about, like, is there anything on-prem that isn't also in the cloud? Because I definitely get the sense, especially with the 2016, they took a cloud edition of Exchange and made this new build, but you're talking about specific attributes that maybe are specific to on-prem and not in the cloud. Actually, before we go deeper into this, because I know we're headed to the body of the show now, Dave, thanks so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or via any of the social media we post to, because I put every show up at Google+, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And if you comment there and we read it on the show, we'll send you a mug. Gareth, diving back into the body of the show here, sir, you've got this great blog post about Microsoft Ignite sessions that every Exchange admin should see. And you were basically referencing them in the comments to Dave as well. And this is a long list. Like, this is 15 different sessions. So that's probably the better part of 15 hours of viewing. Yep. Should we pick some of the gems here? Because there's some really good news coming out of Ignite.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of repeat between some of the sessions, but yeah, I would definitely take a look at those. Some of them have a little bit more of an entertainment value. For example, there's a top 10 reasons why you shouldn't move to Exchange Online, which is a great debate between Tony Redmond and Greg Taylor, and there's some very, very interesting moments in that one. It's a high entertainment value. We definitely see some interesting cameos of what's called Flat Tony, oddly shaped carrots from Greg's garden, and then obviously Greg's grass, which is popular to come up. I guess it seems like it makes its way into every single conference. Greg somehow gets a picture of his grass into one of the sessions. So, but no, it's a very high entertainment value. Steve Kahn was doing the moderation on that, and it was a very interesting a point system. It was kind of very reminiscent of the TV show Whose Line Is It Anyway, right, where the points don't matter, right? So
yeah, they don't actually matter in the end. I have done variations of that game show at different conferences over the years because it is very funny, and Tony Redmond is hilarious. So it seems inevitable that something like that would happen. I got to think the low-hanging fruit is Server 2016 is finally out. You got to be able to run Exchange on 2016.
Yeah, and that's something that so Exchange 2016 CU-free is the one that's going to be supported on Windows Server 2016. Mm-hmm. So you can't run Exchange 2016 RTM or CU1 or CU2. It has to be CU-free that runs on 2016.
Right.
And I don't think there's going to be any plans for them to do, kind of backport that to Exchange 2013. So
I can't imagine why you wouldn't just be running CU3 in the first place. Those cumulative updates are just not that painful.
Right, definitely. And they're a full build, so there's no reason to go get RTM and then go get CU3. You're basically just installing Exchange twice, and that's something it's a bit of a common confusion that comes up quite a bit when I'm doing a migration. It's mm-hmm. We got to go get RTM, or we got to get Service Pack 1. No, you can just go straight to the latest version.
Yeah, it's not a big issue, but I guess the logical thing to do would be you stand up a Server 2016 instance, you set up CU3, and then you move workload across to it and wind down your old ones if that's what you want to do.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah, nothing much more to it than that. Any other favorites here? Obviously, the funny one. I mean, tying to what we were talking about earlier with Dave Aykroyd, this whole online versus hybrid, these were big talking points at Ignite, that this sort of the reality of living in a hybrid world.
Yeah, and there's definitely some quite a few sessions there that are related to hybrid. I mentioned it before, but the session on running hybrid for the long haul is a really good session. So if you have a hybrid environment or you're planning to go to one, that really kind of identifies running it for more than just a migration. So mm-hmm. I definitely would recommend that session. And then also, Michael Van Horenbeek has a really good session on establishing Exchange Hybrid. So he has some really good tips and tricks and pitfalls to watch out for. So that's also a really good session and part of that blog post.
Yeah, no, absolutely valuable for you to just think in those terms. I always like the tips and tricks session, like both as a presenter and as an attendee. What's brilliant about these tips and tricks sessions is if you had one good idea out of it as someone doing the work, the session's paid for itself, which is also great for me as a speaker because I always want to be sure that, people are getting a value from the session. So when you can just knock off, here's 10 great things you need to know, as long as you get one or two, you're wildly happy.
Yeah, and some of the other good sessions are those unplugged expert type sessions. So whether it's like the, unplugged Microsoft engineers or the unplugged Microsoft MVPs or, where they kind of have it, where they're both on the same panel. Those are really good where the audience is just coming up and asking questions and there's no set format. It's just, here's an issue I have or here's a feature I'd like. And it's just that direct interaction with either the product group or Microsoft MVPs that have that have seen it in the real world and that, this is how they've, accomplished, a certain task. So
I've always looked at TechEd that way. Then and Ignite has taken on this mantle of the reason you go to the show is you get to get near the actual engineers. Like they're there talking to the customers. So like this session, you said that the twin sons of different mothers, right? Exchange engineers and Exchange MVPs. Mixed in with an audience of folks that are actually running Exchange and you're going to get immersed in some cool debates.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah,
very, very powerful and great to listen to just be able to dive in and see where that went. I get involved in a lot of these. In fact, I make a run as twice a year. That's a SQL Server Q&A with folks like Kim Tripp and Paul Randall and Brent Ozar and the audience. And it's fascinating if you just round up those shows and listen to them. over a period of time, you find how people's perceptions of the product are changing, what they've got different problems as time goes by. I think about a session like that MVP expert one, you'd hit exactly against that kind of thing. What do you guys do in the field? What are the features you're working on? Like, where's the real pain points?
Right. Definitely.
And, Gareth, give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by UpGuard. In the aftermath of data breaches, the public is often told, we couldn't have seen it coming. But in a lot of cases, that's just not true. Over 80% of breaches have their roots in misconfiguration, whether it's a firewall rule, a server setting, an open port, or a third-party service. UpGuard is the premier system of record for IT configurations, no matter the platform, pinpointing anomalies and surfacing unauthorized changes in critical systems around the world. See how it works and get a live, customized demo at upguard.com/runasradio. All right, where do we go from here? I'm sort of banging down the checklist of cool things that came out of Ignite. I see we're sort of cutting off the later versions of Exchange. I will only run 2008 R2 and above now, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and they're actually going to up that requirement as well for the domain and forest functional level. So at last Ignite, it was like, okay, you can use 2008. You know, you can have the domain and forest functional level 2008. But now they're saying, in potentially in future cumulative updates, 2008 R2 is going to be the new minimum requirement for Exchange. So they're bumping that up a little bit.
Are we out of the primary support for 2008 R2 now and into only extended? So, I mean, we're getting there. That's getting to be an old piece of software.
Yeah, sure is. I mean, yeah, you're thinking about it now. It's what, 8 years old, and R2 is what, about seven years old maybe? Because I think R2 kind of, paralleled, what was it, the Windows 7 software, right?
Pretty much,
yeah. 2008 was Vista, so.
Yeah. And we don't say the V word, goodness knows. So, yeah, no, I just looked it up because I'm that guy. Mainstream support was 2015, so yeah, last year, and now we're in the extended support into 2020. Yeah. So,
and actually that brings up another good point. Exchange 2007 is actually leaving extended support in April. So if you're on Exchange 2007, you've got about 6 months to get off of it, or you won't get any tech support from Microsoft.
Yeah. And you want to move on. I mean, it's been 9 years. Like, it's time. You're going to be happier, right?
Like, yeah.
2007 was a good version of Exchange, but I had more trouble with 2010 than ever had with 2007. 2013 was a great version of Exchange. And like you said, and Tony Revenant said, and 2016 is kind of a service pack. It's pretty painless.
If you look at the management tools, I mean, from a face value, if you logged into the Exchange Admin Center or you logged into PowerShell, you would have no idea if you were using 2016 unless you looked at the build numbers.
Yep.
What has really changed is under the hood. Mm-hmm. The under the hood improvements are amazing. So 2016 has 30% less database I/O than 2013. And then also with the release of CU3 now, we actually have this new feature where the indexes. Mm-hmm. So if you're running a DAG and you have multiple database copies, the indexes will actually now build from their own passive copy instead of reaching across the network to only build from the active copy. So that is a massive reduction also there in network utilization.
Interesting.
And Microsoft's saying up to 40% in some cases. So if you have a DAG that's stretched across, WAN link to multiple sites, that's a massive savings for your WAN link potentially.
Well, I think about, I've had companies, but you remember Riverbed, the Steelhead product? I mean, that was specifically one of their primary features. One of the reasons you bought that device was for remote offices when you were running Exchange, because they were really good at optimizing traffic between Exchange servers over the WAN. And those were not inexpensive devices. Like, that was not a small thing.
Right.
That's a few years ago now. I'm just showing how old I am, I think.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft's kind of at the point now. It's like, you know, we don't want you to be using, you know, these WAN accelerator or, yeah, you know, other type devices in between our Exchange servers. So, and actually, I think one of the sessions that even comes up, I can't remember which session it was, but I think that was one of the,
right,
you know, the points in a particular case study is like, oh, are you using a WAN accelerator? Okay, don't use that.
Yeah, stop doing that. Well, the same way,
stop doing that.
I've heard this over and over again. And it's like, you really don't want to even run your Exchange on a SAN anymore.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, you can if you want. I mean, Microsoft's preferred architecture is to you know, just use inexpensive disk, yeah. right? So it's, but the preferred architecture, it's obviously preferred, right? It's a set of guidelines. Yeah. They're not going to say you're not supported if you don't do it. This is just, you know, they're saying this is how we run it in the cloud. It works well for us. So this is how we feel like you guys should do it. And so what, you know, Microsoft doesn't have expensive SANs in the cloud. They're just, you know, they're using basically JBOD.
Right.
They're just using just a bunch of disks. And they're using 7200 RPM SATA and nearline SAS disks. And that's what you're getting in Office 365. So,
which means they're not even using super top tier disks either, right? Like often when you're buying these SAN drives, like they're using 15K disks and stuff, like expensive hardware. The fact that you can go to less expensive hardware and get good results.
Yeah, not even that, but you know, when you're getting up into the solid state SANs and you know, the IOPS that you're getting out of that. And sure, there's plenty of products that would do beautifully from more IOPS.
Sure. And it's not like Exchange wouldn't benefit from IOPS. It's just a question of how well, you know, once you're getting your mail every second, do you care that it's coming every half a second?
And there's going to be a point where Exchange is just not getting any benefit from that additional, from those additional IOPS.
You're now bound by network or bound by something else. You're not waiting for IOPS.
There was another one of the sessions where they were talking about that the average database IOPS was about, you know, 10 IOPS. And they were saying, well, with a, you know, if you have JBOD and you're, you know, because obviously they also say don't do RAID,
right.
which is a kind of a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're talking about these 7200 nearline SAS drives doing, I think it was 70, 80 or 90 IOPS. So it's like, you know, yep, you're good.
You're load 4 enough.
Databases on this and you're all set.
And you're saying, I mean, I'm all over like RAID 5, RAID 6, just striping is causing you grief, but mirroring, like, do they care about that? Or is it you'd rather use a DAG and not RAID at all?
Yeah, they're recommending if you use a DAG, the way that they kind of compare it is they call their DAG almost like a software RAID.
Right.
You know, so if you have those four copies.
Yeah. Why do you want the drive doing that too?
You know, and I think in their eyes, it's like having four disks in a RAID 5 or something like that, right?
Yeah. Why are you're just interested in another level of abstraction that doesn't really give you any benefit.
Yeah. And that's one of the big messages that we've heard at this Ignite and the last Ignite is, you know, keep it simple, make Exchange simple. Don't add all these elements. And this is kind of where they go with the virtualization as well. You know, they'll support virtualization. And honestly, I think 9 out of 10 migrations I run into are virtualized Exchange.
Sure.
But Microsoft's point with the preferred architecture is the virtualization layer is just adding, you know, that extra piece of complexity.
Right.
And there's definitely a lot of pitfalls. You know, you can't overcommit your memory. You can't overcommit your CPU. You can't do snapshots. So I think in a lot of ways they're saying, well, you're almost making those virtual hosts into physical hosts by the end of the day with the, you know, the stuff that you shouldn't be doing with Exchange.
So. And in the end, we were virtualizing to get away from hardware dependency. And the fact that the architecture of Exchange itself does that just speaks to you're not getting yourself anything when you put them into VMs.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've seen over the history, right, where the roles have been split out, where, you know, by the time we were in 2010, we had CAS and Hub and Mailbox and you know, well, we won't really talk about Edge, but, you know, and then with 2013, they kind of came back a little bit.
Yep.
And then by 2016, it's only one role.
It's back to
obviously, you can still extol an Edge, but yeah, it's one role because the resources that the CAS piece used and the resources that the Mailbox piece, you know, used, they kind of complement each other because they're using kind of, you know, one's more CPU intense or one's more disk IO intense.
Yes.
So it makes sense just to throw them all on the same box.
Well, and separating them just meant that you were now bound by the wire, right? Like in my experience these days, when I'm looking at the average rack, it's like the constrained resource is the wire. Our disks are as fast as you need them to be, and caches are smarter than ever. Our CPUs, for the most part, seem to be laying around playing poker and smoking cigarettes because there's nothing to do. Like, we are constrained by the wire, and it's still expensive. You know, anything above gigabit is hard to do. 2016, well, in 2012, R2 before it made bonding networking trivial, but you're still only talking, you went from 1 to 2 to 5, like it wasn't 10 gig and it wasn't certainly 100 gig. So that's our constrained resource now. And the more you can keep stuff sharing in a memory space or in a process space within a machine, the faster it's going
to
go.
Yeah. And I think it plays nice into the whole, you know, going back to the point of, we've dropped network utilization and CU3 by up to 40%, right?
Wow.
You know, Microsoft's other point, back in the 2010 days, if you were building that DAG and there was very specific instructions on, you know, building replication networks and building client-based networks, and that's all gone away as well. Now it's all, just keep it all combined. Just keep it all the same.
Right.
There's no reason to split it out. And I think even less reason now with 40% less.
And this feels like learning from the cloud, right? That we're seeing the effect of cloud architecture, that what you want is essentially symmetrical pieces that are redundant to each other so that you're not dependent on any one of them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these advances had to be made for them to get to the cloud. I mean, could you imagine them trying to run Exchange 2000 free, you know, shared storage?
No.
In the cloud, it never would have worked.
And there once was a time where we thought that this was great. These were creating levels of abstraction that we were going to be able to dial up and down independently from each other, and we didn't. You know, it was just a battle all the time where, you know, diagnosing what's the current choke point, where are we struggling here, where are we struggling there. Is it, in some ways, is the architecture so much simpler now?
Yeah, it's definitely so much simpler. You know, the migrations are easier. It's, and it's all because of the cloud. I mean, I remember doing Exchange 2010 service pack updates, and it almost felt like every other one I did would fail for something.
This is why another reason to use VMs. You'd take a snapshot, you'd put it in the lab with no networking, you'd do the patch, and hell, half the time the patch would fail.
Yeah. And a lot of times it didn't matter how much testing you did in your lab, you could still take it to production and it would still fail for a whole
different
reason.
Something else would go wrong, you know? You'd take a kick in somewhere else.
The nice thing about the cumulative updates is they're a whole reinstall. When you're applying a cumulative update, it's basically reinstalling Exchange on your box.
Right.
And these are all cumulative updates that have been tried and tested in the cloud for 6 months or more before you even get them. So
absolutely.
The tagline for Exchange 2016 is forged in the cloud, and that's exactly what you're getting. Is you're getting something that was forged in the cloud come back to you that's been tried and tested at scale. So,
well, and it almost feels like patching is obsolete. Patching was ultimately about saving disk space, so you didn't have to ship the whole app around. We got enough bandwidth. What we don't have is time to figure out why that patch didn't apply successfully. So, just replacing it is very cloudish. Hey, I noticed in your list, you mentioned Office 365 groups, which is, this is kind of new stuff and really only for the online folks. Were you excited about it? Like, I'm really interested to see these new cloud only features starting to emerge, the delves, the groups and teams and so on.
Yeah. And it's definitely becoming more popular now, especially because more and more clients that I run into are going hybrid. Yeah, we're seeing a lot more people use the Office 365 groups. And I really like them. I mean, it seems like, for years there on-prem, we were trying to get Exchange and SharePoint to talk to each other and have team mailboxes and all that kind of good stuff, and just never really seemed to have a good adoption of it. And, you know, Microsoft's really made it work with Office 365 groups. You're basically getting a shared mailbox with a document library, and now Planner's thrown in there as well,
right,
which is what I like to call a little bit, you know, Project Lightlight.
Yes.
So it's really nice. And it's, in a lot of ways, it's better than just a standard distribution list, because it's really an archive of, you know, all the conversations that somebody needed to collaborate on.
Right.
So if you have a new member or new employee that joins in and jumps onto this team, they have that repository. They can see all the documents, you know, they can see all the emails that have happened before, and they don't have to, you know, run around and say, hey, can you resend this to me? Because a distribution list, you know, it's kind of one of those Exchange just throws it at the mailboxes and forgets about it, right? So,
well, and this is back to that old idea that Exchange is the institutional memory of an organization, right? You've got these mailboxes that represent what actually happened over the course of a project. And the idea that we could surface that in a useful way, index that in a useful way so people can get up to speed and we can actually remember what came before. I love everything about that. I don't think we have it nailed yet, but I'm glad we're actually worried about that problem, trying to get better at it.
Yeah, it's definitely an amazing step in the right direction. I really like the idea of the 365 groups.
Well, I really appreciate you curating this list. I'll include the link in the show notes here for folks to just take a look. If you care about Exchange, I think you grabbed a nice collection of 15 out of the, 1,400 sessions there were at Ignite. Like, talk about drinking from the fire hose. It was crazy there.
Yeah. So that was my goal. My goal was to really try and find the sessions that would, talk to, Exchange admins, guys that have currently got on-prem, or guys that have, you know, have hybrid or are going to hybrid, or just interested in some of the new features. And there's a couple sessions on there as well. You know, what's coming new to Outlook or Outlook for mobile. So, it's also had to include those as well.
All good things. So where can we see you next, Gareth? You got a conference coming up, you know, doing any travel or presentations we could talk about?
No public speaking. I do have some more podcasts that are coming up soon. But also I actually will be at IT Dev Connections next week. So just as an attendee, not as a speaker at that one. But yeah, I hope to see some folks at IT Dev Connections.
Yeah, I think time shifting wise, this comes out after that show's already done. So you could have seen him, but he but yeah, that's the nature of podcasting, my friend. What can you do? All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.